Be doing this seriously. We're supposed to be professionals, damn it. And there goes the monetization. Good morning and welcome to the Morning Brew with Hunter Drew. Today I'm joined by Nathan and Alex. We're going to be talking about children transitioning to teenagers and the gap and what we can look forward to and what parents can prepare themselves for. Now, Nathan has the teenager. Alex has the close to be teenager. And mine, my oldest is 10. My youngest is 7. So they're on the pathway. So you've got a pretty good mix right here. You know, and eventually we'll get some guys in who are the late teens, the 20s, but that's for another show. So Nathan, you're a repeat guest, the barbarian, the warrior himself, and now Mr. Soap. So let's a quick update on what you've been up to.
Oh, hell, across the board, everything. Since last time, I think the blog got updated, Barbarian Rhetoric. It's starting to look good. I'm having a whole bunch of other guys coming in and dropping some awesome posts and words, so I'm not the only one that you get to read, which I think is really good. Soap's taking off. It's getting places. We got the IG going, and that's just fun.
Now, aren't you running a campaign for the Instagram?
Yes, I am. When we get 100 followers and we're down, I think we need 30 more. We're going to be giving away 4 bars of soap on that.
And is that 4 bars to one man, or is that 4 bars to 4 different people? Or
4 bars to 1 man.
Nice.
4 bars to 1 man, and then that's at Barbaric Soap.
I'm going to drop that in the chat right now.
Okay.
Alex, you're the first time on here. So all I put for your description was you're a lawyer. What else are you besides Alex the lawyer?
Alex the lawyer, Alex the computer programming lawyer. Before I was a lawyer, I was a computer programmer. I still crank out the occasional video game that I write. I'm interested in artificial intelligence. So, you know, I've got a lot of homebrew stuff, machine learning. Other than that, to blow off steam, I am a bit of an internet troll. I'm not going to talk about what social media accounts I have because I don't want anybody to know.
I like that. Good. Keep it to yourself. Yeah. Now, we crossed paths in FOE. We were talking the other night during the group chat. You know, you're like, hey, I can come in the Morning Brew. And I was like, awesome. Nate, you can too. What are we going to talk about? We decided, hey, let's talk about, you know, what the future brings as kids age. So today, that's that topic. And that's how we got to this point. And Alex, that's why you're here. So pretty cool. You know, but now it's not a group setting. Now we got a bunch of people watching us speak. So it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
Let's toss this one to Nate's corner first. As your child grew, was there a huge, because people say, oh, the terrible twos, you know, the terrible toddlers, you know, they have like these little monikers for phases that kids go through. Teenagers have that same thing. You know, they're like, oh, when your kid's a teen, they're not going to like you anymore. They're not going to listen to you anymore. Their hormones and everything, they're going to rebel. Did you see a huge change in your child, let's say from 10 to 13?
Yes.
How so?
I get to be one of the blessed ones. We'll say blessed instead of lucky. I got to see my kid break out of his shell, start taking the lead in things and pushing himself and watching his confidence grow. A lot of people, in that same token, he started to take more steps away from me, you know, which is good. He started to work and become his own person, become his own man, and become his own, that confidence level as it grows, it separates us. But at the same time, we're having better conversations now because everything that I've just been pushing out and talking to him and thought I was talking to a brick wall, he's starting to bring back and bring those conversations back and start asking more questions about him. And every year, as his confidence level goes up, more stuff is happening. At the same time, I got the stupid teenage years. You know, they think they know everything. He thinks he's smarter than I am. And then I just sit there and watch him fall on his face, smile, pick him up, and we go from there. And it's just great to watch.
Now, are you allowing him to fail properly? You know, he does fall, like you said, he falls on his face. But when he fails, are you like, all right, see, you thought you had it the right way. I let you do it that way. You failed. Now let's try that way, which I said from the beginning.
Which, on that note, most of the time when that happens, he comes and talks to me. So I don't even have to start that conversation. He's bringing that conversation to me going, all right, we flipped the script. Instead of me going, all right, this is all the steps you need to do, da-da-da-da-da. Now it's like, okay, we're playing soccer. He's like, I missed this goal. Well, why? Well, because I was looking over here at this, and the ball went this way and went there. I'm like, what should he have you had done? Should have placed myself on this side of the goal and do that. So we're working these problems out, and I'm having him work these problems out, not me just telling him everything what to do. So it's more of a guiding principle now, but it's great that he's bringing it. He's comfortable enough to come and talk to me about it.
That's awesome. Alex, I can't help but point out, I've got this Happy Fall Y'all mug I'm sipping from, and you got freaking, what is that, Teddy Roosevelt?
TR.
Like, damn, my testosterone's plummeting, and yours is like through the roof. My beard's going to fall off.
It's actually a mug I picked up. TR is a personal hero of mine. And I guess, God, it was about 15 years ago now, going through Yellowstone. And they have TR everything at Yellowstone, so I had to get my TR gear. And what's left for me now, everything else has been lost with this mug.
Now, your son is 11?
He's 11.
Now, are you grooming him at this point now for, you know, becoming a man, you know, creating a rite of passage of sorts? Or is he kind of just in the mix and you guys are doing your thing? How are you going about getting him prepped for teenage years and social things and hormones and all that shit?
The strategy that I've taken, even from the point that he was a little kid, was to try and prepare him for independence, right? So I've always given him a lot of latitude to make his own choices. I've given him a lot of latitude to fail. And like you were just talking about, you know, do you let him fail properly? I've never heard those words before, but, you know, and he has seen that scene in Burn After Reading. What have we learned here, Palmer? So when something blows up in his face, I look at him, what have we learned here, Palmer? He hates those words. but he knows that I don't want to hear, I don't effing know.
Right? So, I don't even know what I would do. I'm like, oh, okay.
so we'll go through things like that. But, you know, just really, I've spent most of his life teaching him about logical reasoning, emotional management, things like that. Like, there's a little bit of a wrinkle in the mix because my boy has a very mild form of autism. So that's resulted in me learning a set of techniques that probably, you know, are of general application just to help manage his emotions, because autistic kids tend to be, they react poorly to sudden changes, right? They react poorly to sudden overload and stimulus. So if you can't get mad at them, yell at them like a lot of people do, because it's just completely counterproductive, like even more so than a regular child. And you have to sort of give them lead time and say, okay, in 5 minutes, we're going to talk about this, right? So that mentally their gears can get ready to do that. It's probably just best practices generally, but it's something that's necessary to even get to step one in my case. But, you know, we've been working on, you know, worldview and the importance of fitness from the time that he was about five or six, and it's made him really receptive. And fortunately, even though I'm divorced from his mother, she's been playing a good role in that as well, that we have sort of the same style. So when we both sit him down, it's like, this is important now because you're sliding in your physical fitness. You've got to do something. We don't care what it is. And then you make him come up with a solution, right? Luckily for us, school's not an issue. Socialization isn't really an issue. He's got a good set of friends. He's a big kid. He's the biggest in the school, so nobody bullies him. So we're actually, you know, lucky in a lot of senses that, you know, the things that we're working on are not really to solve like major problems, but just to sort of refine him and make him better.
There's a lot about what you said that there, some of it, I don't even know if luck is the right word. I think you made it happen to the way that it's played out. Now, genetically, for him being the biggest kid, all right, that just happened. You know, obviously your genes did that, but there's nothing you really played a role in his height or his size.
Right.
But you did play a role into how he handles himself. You know, the school that you worked with, you know, your wife or your ex-wife and you being on the same playbook, having, you know, work, keeping it consistent for the kid. That's That's not luck. That's you showing up and doing the work. And I think there are a lot of people out there who, let's say their child is diagnosed with autism or whatever degree of whatever issue there is, they just start banging their head and they're like, well, why me? And why do I have to go through this? And well, look, it doesn't matter. Those are the cards you were dealt, and here's what you're going to handle, and here's how you're going to do it. You know, you can get frustrated, you know, but go take that out somewhere else. Go have a heavy bag. Go for a run. Find positive means of venting that frustration, and then come back and don't take it out on the kid. You know, so I think for those watching, if anybody's facing that, you know, it's not luck. You know, he didn't just get lucky. He's found a way to handle it. And if you're facing one of those issues, find a way to handle it. You know, these are the cards you have, whether you like it or not. We're going to make it work. You're going to find your support system. There's stuff across the board for whatever it is you're facing. And that's something that I think we need to remind people is happiness and success doesn't just happen. You know, kids aren't just magically good. You know, parents, fathers specifically in these discussions play a huge role in that. I did want to know from both of you, do either of you have any issue or any sort of complex with you're basically raising your kid to leave you and you're basically raising your child to not need, you're making yourself obsolete. Are you replacing that with something? Are you bringing something else into that? You're like, all right, I know kids will always need you, but just less so. Like my kid's 10, every day he needs me. You know, when he's 15, he's not. He'll come home, do his thing and probably go out with his friends. And I'm like, well, what am I? Obviously for me, I'm going to write and record because that's just what I do. So how are you guys filling in that gap as you're needed less and less as a father? That's a big question.
Tracking your question there. Are you asking what am I doing or what is he doing?
What are you doing? What are you doing?
What am I doing? Oh, yourself... I'm working too hard.
As I was asking the question, I realized this is the wrong group to ask it to. Let me rephrase. For fathers who just work the normal 9-to-5, when they come home, there's no YouTube to do. There's no, you know, for Alex, you know, there's no cases to start working on. For those dads, what could they do and start implementing as they're needed less?
Okay, because... that's a better question.
Thank
okay.
you. I had to rephrase.
Yes, I have to take time out of my normal day to make sure I spend time with him. I think, let's go back, well, let's flip this a little bit. There's a key point. Even as they get older and they need us less, you still have to make time for them. And when they're ready to hang out with you and you know, they may be gaming, they may be out with friends, they may not have anybody, but when they come and go, hey, will you play soccer with me? Or, hey, will you go, let's go to the park or let's go for a hike or whatever. You need to stop because those moments are precious. You're getting less and less of them when they come to ask you to hang out, the older they get. Yeah, by the time he hits 15, 16 years old, he's already, you know, planning car stuff, whatever, and he is going to be gone more. So when they do want to hang out with you, make sure you're giving time for them. Now, back to your question. I think part of that is you get more into a creative mode. You got to start building. You have to start doing something. That garage that you've let go for the last 5 years is just piling up full of crap. Clean it all out and start creating. If your thing's online or writing or poetry or books, whatever it is, start creating something. And as you create something, that'll start filling in those different spots and you'll start building on it and work from there. If all you do is sit back and, you know, I'm going to relax now, you're just going to get fat, lethargic, and you're going to start hating life. And go, where did it all go? Or you'll live vicariously through your kid playing football or baseball or something else because he's the one doing all the action while you're on the sidelines. You can't be on the sidelines. You got to keep pushing forward.
Do you agree with that, Alex?
Yeah, I would say that. Like when you asked a question, I had it packaged as, you know, there's a distinction between your kid needing you and wanting you, right? And when they're little, they need you. Like, I need you to feed me. I need you to keep me safe. I need you to change my diaper, whatever it is, right? And as they get older, right, like now my kid's walking home and he can stay at home for hours. And it's nice in the sense that it sort of frees me up to not have to tow him around everywhere, especially places that he doesn't want to be, right? It's like, I know that you hate shopping for groceries on Saturday morning, and now you can just stay and rot in front of your Xbox. I'm going to go, and it's a lot less frustrating for the both of us, right? So that's nice. And he, like what Nathan was saying, comes at me and says, well, do you want to do this? Do you want to do this? And I take that as a great thing, because now he has options, but he's exercising at least part of the time the option to spend time with me. And you know, that's a compliment and nice. And, you know, as he goes to university and goes out and starts a family of his own, it means that, you know, he's going to be a part of my life, but just in a different way. In terms of, am I replacing him with anything? I guess the thing is, I've always had so much on the go. I never just stopped everything to, you know, be a father. Like, I folded being a father into everything else that I was doing. So as he sort of fades into the background, you know, I've had more time to write code. I've had more time to, you know, develop myself professionally. I've had more time to focus on, you know, staying healthy and things like that. Cause none of us are getting any younger. Right. And you know, what was a sort of a nice to do, a good to do, hit the gym and stay healthy becomes a necessary to do as the clock keeps running, you know. So there's always things to do, and I find in a lot of ways getting older sort of frees me up to do things that it's now time to do, right? Of course, I'm gonna throw a wrench into that, because probably within 2 years I'll have a newborn again.
Time to start over.
My 12-year-old, well, he'll be 13 then. He knows that this is on the way. And his attitude is, well, I'm not changing any diapers, but it's your life. You can do whatever you want. It's like, okay, well, at least you're taking the news better than some people.
Now, Alex, here's one. I noticed the biggest change from 11 to 12. For here, it'd be from 6th to 7th grade. It seemed like 6th grade was a big shift in perspective. It's like he did sports. First year, he got his confidence and it started to really grow. And going into the 7th grade, it was like balls to the wall. That's where I noticed and he's continuing the momentum. Would you say there's been a bigger shift from him to 11 and 12? And are you seeing him go forward, or are you still in the kind of just slow shift?
Oh, no, there's been a real acceleration over the last year, and not just a psychological or a behavioral one, but a physical one too. I guess it was summer 2017. I took him down to a natural history museum, and he was standing next to an exhibit that measured height. And he was 4.5 feet tall, right? Now he's 5.5 feet tall. So he's grown a foot
The last
2 years. And sometimes I'll just look and I'll be like, God, you're not a little kid anymore. Like you're a big kid. And you know, just watching his confidence grow and his behavior improve. Like I mentioned, he has some autism, and what was necessary at the start of his schooling career was what called an individualized programming or progress plan. And it was, well, he's got these challenges in the classroom and you know, these are how the strategies we're going to use to manage it. And you know, way back when he was diagnosed, the psychologist all said, well, he's got really high general intelligence, so over the time he's going to figure out how to compensate for this. And last year, the individualized progress plan was, he doesn't need any special supports, right? So in this last year, right, he's gone from needing a certain degree of support to needing none. And he's, you know, sometimes I'll come down and he's made his own lunch, or he's, you know, taking care of things, right? He's starting to do things without having been prompted.
Asked. Oh, that's so wonderful.
Organizing, you know, events with his friends and, you know, just sort of taking the ball and running with it. And to me, it's actually sort of a delight when I find out, it's like, wow, you learned or did this thing all from your own internal motivation. And that is to me just, you know, one of those little gold nuggets that you keep digging for as a parent. And when you run across them, it's just fantastic.
Yes.
I think there's also there's a level of respect, or like a different level of appreciation or acknowledgement that comes when you see a young man be showing signs of being a man, you know, figuring out the world. That's a thing a man does, not a thing a child does, you know, finding ways to compensate for potential like discrepancies, you know, or weaknesses. They're like, all right, well, I'm weak here, but I can do that to fix that. You know, being able to figure that out, that's something a man does, you know. And you're looking at, and I'm saying men because we're talking of sons right now, but even daughters, you know, when they become, they show those signs of like womanly care and going to take care of, that's something a woman does, not a child. So it's pretty cool as an adult to see your child becoming an adult, because there's a level of, as a peer, you're like, I get it. I'm 32. So at 32, I've had to go through what you're doing right now in my life today. Like today, I have to compensate for this. I got to make sure that works. You know, it's interesting. And you're talking about growth. My son, like I said, he's 10, but he was always the smallest kid in the team. So one of the motivators, I give him the chip on the shoulders. Oh, you know, they're doubting you. You know, when you walk into the plate, you know, maybe his first, maybe second year, they're like, oh, move in. And he cracked the ball over the head. And I'm like, boom, see, show him. And then now he caught up. So now he's 10. And now the kids that were taller than him, he's looking them eye to eye. I'm like, oh, I need a new motivator. Like, you're starting to grow. I need something else to get you pumped. You said something earlier I kind of wanted to come back to. And that was a child needing you or a child wanting to be with you. And I immediately thought of Anthony M., who he's an FOE. He's the Peaceful Fatherhood. On Twitter, he is the Polite Savage. So if you're on Twitter and you're a father, definitely follow this man. He's all about fatherhood, peaceful parenting, things of that nature. But one of the things he said that blew my mind in our first conversation, I believe it was on The Morning Brew. He said, you know, my daughters, they are his kids. They want to be with him. Like they'll go out and do their thing, but they come home and I want to be with you. And one of them said to him, you know, I feel like I should be paying you rent because of all the things you're giving me. And I appreciate it all. And we're living there. And I'm like, wow, that's the point you want to get your children to. You want them to like their father. You want them to want to come see you. And to your point, Nate, you know, I don't want our kids. And you're, as FOE men, it's weird because we talk about this all the time, but there are a lot of fathers out there who all they do is sit down and drink beer and watch TV. So when their kids come to visit, it's not like, hey, let's go play catch, or hey, let's go climb, or hey, let's go hike. It's just, hey, come on in. And they walk in and they sit down, and that is them hanging out. You know, we need to make sure that we're actively countering that, not doing that.
Yes.
I thought you had a rant going there. So I
do. I have like three things floating around in my head, bouncing back and forth. One, what Alex said earlier, one of the things, and he surprises me. I never ask him to take out the garbage anymore unless we're just cleaning the house or something. And it's probably once or twice a week that I'll walk in, I'll be like, oh, I need to take the garbage out this morning. And it's already done. No words are said or anything. It's just accomplished. 2 years ago, that would have never happened unless I straight up go, hey, grab the garbage. You know, it's one of those, like, he's starting to think those things out, or goes and makes his lunch, or I'm busy or whatever, makes his own dinner, frees up. And Colton said something in chat earlier, it frees up mental bandwidth. And that's where I'm getting to. My mental bandwidth is easier because he's taking care of more of his stuff. At the same time, he still needs a guide on things. Another one, and this happened this past week. I was just taking a break from the internet, the world, and everything, and I went and sat on my porch, which just happened to be about the time he's coming home from school. I'd gotten a wonderful junk mail sitting there, you know, all the crappy stuff where they're sending you to sign up for this credit card or that finance thing or whatever, and I looked, chuckled through it on there. He got off the bus, came over, sat down on the porch, and was like, what's that mail? I'm like, it's junk mail. You know, they're trying to give us money even when we don't need it. And then we proceeded to have a 25-minute conversation on credit, finances, loans, what's good, what's not, percentage rates, everything else. And then he's like, okay, got up, ran off, didn't talk to him the rest of the night. Yeah. Playing with friends, went and played some soccer, went biking, whatever else. And the next time we really chatted was at night when we're like, all right, have a good night's sleep. See you in the morning. You don't have to chase him at that point. That 20 minutes was better than me following him around, asking him how everything else was going the rest of the time. because it was a solid conversation. And like you're talking, he talked to me like a man, not like a freaking little kid. He asked intelligent questions, and I'm like, ooh, pushing my boundaries of knowledge. It's like, okay, I've got to go read some stuff up. That way I can answer him intelligently or find him the answer he needs so he can learn better, you know, and skip those things. And those are the ones that I look for now. It's like, okay, he's engaging me. Set phone down at dinner, type, talk, even sitting here at the computer working. It's like, okay, he's engaging me. I make sure I engage him back and not just blow him off. And I think in dealing and answering questions, that's one of the problems. A lot of dads, you know, soccer, they want to drop them off and let the coach take care of them. I'm sitting right there. Does it kill an hour of my time? Yeah, but for what? I'm watching him. I'm sitting there. I'm watching his footwork do things. I don't say or holler a lot because I don't want to talk over the little coaches. But at the same time, he sees me engage with him. I just don't drop him off and then go walk down and talk to all the parents or wander off. Or like some of the parents are sitting over in the parking lot. Okay, kids, go play. I'll be here. And they're all, you know, overweight. They don't move. They're hurting, whatever. And I think that's part of it. So even if you're not coaching your kids directly, just being engaged with them, cheering them on. You're their best cheer coach.
Just to add to that, as a coach, one thing that that drives me insane is when players only get practice during practice time. If you're a parent, stay and watch your child and listen to the coaches. If the coaches are saying, hey, you need to work on this or work on that, or you need to fix that. That's what, when you go home, you drill. There's no way you can help your child train at home if you don't know where the deficiencies are. So let's say you do have something, you have to go shopping or you have to go, you're going to do groceries while the kid's practicing. I got it. You know, for me, it's baseball. Baseball is a boring sport. A lot of the time you're just standing around working on little things. So go do that. But when you come back, talk to the coach. Hey, how did little Johnny do? Is there anything I can do at home? How can I help him? What equipment should I get? That would, oh my God, that would be, make it bring a child who's maybe okay to a great stud, you know, a great player in that sport. And I'm not talking professional. I'm not talking, you know, college. I'm talking very good in their peers. They will shine because so many just get the bare minimum.
Yep. One of the big ones in his match, was it last Saturday or the Saturday? I don't know. One of his last games, talk about big eighth graders. This kid was standing at like 6 foot, 160 pounds, playing against my little guy that's 5'2 and 100 pounds. Well, he kept rushing him. The other kid, and he was a nice redheaded kid, so I was calling him Big Red. But he kept rushing my boy, and mine would back off from him. And I'm like, no. So I waited till after the game, and on the way home, I'm like, you're faster than him. You're more agile than him. And all he has power. I was like, why did you keep backing off? Well, he was running straight at me. What do you think? I'm like, okay, we're going to work on this. And then our next couple of practices, I ran roughshod over my kid. Didn't hurt him. I mean, I pushed him down and did stuff, you know, pushed him hard. And I'm like, slam into me. Come on. If you can take me on, Big Red is nothing.
For people who don't know, you are a monster of a human. It is insane. Like when we met, I'm like, hey, what's up, man?
But it's controlled chaos at that point. Did I play rough with him, more rough than we had done our other practices? Absolutely. But by the time we were done with him, he was slamming into me, kicking the ball between my legs, doing everything that I knew he was capable of, but I worked to take that fear up. A big person's running at you. What do? Well, you kick the ball between their legs and outrun them. I mean, the guy ran in straight lines. He's just a big oaf. Hell, he hadn't even grown into his body yet, and I can tell that. But my boy, you know, he's a half a head taller than him and heavier, and he's like, yeah, there's the type of things. And that's why you sit and watch and compensate. And I would even say with the baseball, you know, parents that watch their kids play, they can figure out the little stuff and then ask the coach what do they need to work on. If they go off to do groceries or whatever, they don't get to see that stuff. You can tell them, but there's still, it's not registering in there. So it's a, you got to stay engaged even when it's boring as all get out. And I think that's my biggest problem. I get bored. I might pull my phone out or something. And then I'm like, oh, this is da da da. But you have to stay engaged. Not necessarily 100% of the time, but at least 75 to 80% of the time, you got to be paying attention to what's going on.
Now, Alex, we're talking sports and compensating on that. Has your son ever used his autism as an excuse for not being able to do it? Or does he ever say like, oh, it's, I can't get this because of that?
Never once.
That's awesome.
Never once. And you know, I'm not even sure why that is, because it's not something that, you know, we ever communicated to him was not an acceptable excuse. He just never did it. And I guess the thing is that kids model what they see. And neither his mother nor I sit around making excuses. Oh, I can't do this because, you know, I left my soy sandwich out on the counter last night. Like, whatever. But we've never been an excuse family, right? And both his mother and I, when we were together, and I presume still when she's alone with him, I do. I mock people who make excuses mercilessly, right? So he just doesn't have that mindset. You know, and part of it, I think, is that we've never talked down to him. We never used baby talk. We never held back from using the appropriate word at the appropriate time, so his vocabulary had to be bigger. We never prevented him from knowing about anything that was true and factual. So our rule early on was, if it really happened, you're allowed to know about it. So you know, a couple of years ago, we're watching the 9/11 special, and my mother's like, do you think you should let him watch that? So, it happened. It's real. I'm not raising him to live in Disneyland, right? So he's always, you know, had a really firm factual foundation to base things on. But he sees, you know, the people around him, everybody, even his stepmother, like, she's not made of excuses either, right? Like, so kids will model what's around them. And I guess, you know, that's sort of how that has shaken out, is that he's just never been coddled because of it. And it's never even occurred to him to go, well, I can't do this. Like, you know, and within the bounds, like, you know, because he's got, you know, heightened sensitivity to sound. Well, here's some noise canceling headphones. Get on with it, right? Just like, you know, I'm wearing glasses, right? Nobody sat there saying, well, you know, you should just squint and sit closer to the board. You give people the tools they need to succeed. But beyond that, you know, it's not the tools needed to succeed to overcome, but not a basis for underachievement.
That is very well said.
Alex, this is because I've been telling Hunter, because we've had some inside the fraternity walls, some wonderful conversations. That I told you he'd be great, Hunter. See,
we've been having these
on a regular basis.
I think that's the first time on this show that I was so in tune with what you were saying. Like, wow, that is why I have these conversations. That's why I want people to see this, that I lost what the fuck we were just talking about. But that right there is exactly why I enjoy the discussions on fatherhood. You know, I enjoy talking about different types of parenting styles and techniques. I hope that the people watching this are like, oh, wow, I could apply that. You know, instead of saying squint, hey, here's a tool to succeed. Now get on with it. Do the work. Get it done. We're not going to accept mediocrity. Here's the standard. You will reach it. I will help you reach it with whatever means I can, but you do the work. I will give you the tools. You will use them. So well said. And I that sort of segues into something I did want to talk about. And that is, do you believe that parents are handicapping their children to being children longer. We often talk about the man child, you know, he's 40 years old in the basement, but that's because mom and dad never gave him, there's no reason for this guy to leave. You know, it's not like he's going to college and he's allowed to stay at home past 18. No, he's doing nothing and staying at home. And the parents at no point were like, look, you need to go out and live your life and not be like a little parasite in our life. Your mother and I got you to this point, but at some point you got to spread the wings and fly. Do you think that is a societal thing, a parental thing? You know, why are we seeing this continuation of, oh, 30 is the new 20? No, it's not. 30 is 30. Get to work.
I think that it's a confluence of things. Like, he's on the cusp of being 12. And in the particular jurisdiction that I live, there's no statutory age that sort of limits your ability to leave your child alone. But judicial decisions have set it at 12. And I'm thinking, God, that's nuts. Like when I was 7, I was riding my bike back and forth to school and I was, staying home alone for a few hours. And that's well within the bounds. And you know, you read this decision, and it's so ridiculous and lurid, right? It's like, well, you know, somebody who's 11 might accidentally start a fire. It's like, okay, well, I the thing is, the fact is that there's a lot of people older than 11 that have accidentally started a fire, right? So like he's now just a month away from being 12. So it's like, okay, you know what? The law are close enough. It's like, are you gonna accidentally start a fire? You know not to accidentally start a fire if I go to the store, right? Like, yeah, I'm not an idiot. Okay. But it's...
I'm laughing. I have yeah, I'm not an idiot, Dad. Here, Alex. And I called my boy up the other day, and I'm like, how's everything going at home? He's like, well, I haven't burnt the house down.
There you go. That's the A+ part of it. But to the societal thing, I think you know, and I'm loath to criticize anybody's parenting because everybody's got a different situation. But you know, a couple years ago, I was down visiting, you know, my now wife, and her children are significantly older than mine. They're in their 20s, and one of them was in a fender bender. And we were you know about an hour away. And she's like, oh, I gotta go help them. I'm like, why? They're in their 20s. It's a fender bender. They can call the insurance company. They can take care of this, right? And you know what? When you're in your 20s, everything is going to be a first time. You're going to screw it up a little bit. It's not going to be as smooth as your parent who's been doing it for, you know, your entire life, right? Like, I think, you know, sometimes it's okay to let people stumble and fail a little bit because otherwise you're never going to learn. You get better across iterations, right? And you know, backing away from that and it just seems to me like there's a societal fear of failure. We live in this bizarre time where the only acceptable level of risk is zero, and I don't understand that, right? It's like, well, we can never let kids fail, we can never let them take any risks. You know, one of the things that I found so frustrating with soccer when I was doing, and we only lasted one season, was that they wouldn't keep score. Oh. And
the kids keep score. I promise you that.
And that's where I was going with this, Hunter, is afterwards he's like, yeah, we lost. The other team got 12 points and we got 8. And I'm like, oh, you count. And he said, yeah, of course we count. What would be the point otherwise? It's like, I'd love for you to like write a little note.
I like your kid, man. and
so that I can send it away to the people that organize the soccer here, because apparently they think you're too delicate to know whether you won or lost. And he goes, well, that's stupid, right? and the only acceptable level of risk, so that's why we can't leave kids alone when they're 12. I'm not quite sure where it comes from, but you know, if you've got a functional family situation and everybody's on the same page, it's easy to rise above, you know, societal programming. turn off the TV, only associate with people worth associating with, right? Don't be scared to break the mold, especially if the mold is long-term damaging, right?
I'm going to give a quick shout out to Colton, though he's probably not the best model of playing it safe. He put so soft and safe. Risk is fun. Colton's crazy. So maybe take that with a grain of salt. But risk is good. I mean, that's how you get stronger is you put a stressor on you. You've got to be stressed in these situations. You know, and everybody has their path. And this isn't tooting the military horn. But by 24 years, I moved out of my house at 19 and I had deployed twice by 24. And I had over 650 days at sea by 25. And at no point did I ever consider going home. At no point did it ever cross my mind. I got into a really bad accident. Like I flipped my Mustang and it went nuts. And we did a few cartwheels. I didn't call my home. I went to my wife and I was like, hey, what do I do? She's like, because it was right outside the apartment complex we were in at the time. She's like, yeah, you go back to your car because the cops are coming. So I go on back. I'm like, I don't know. I hydroplaned and I was turning the corner.
I
was probably speeding.
The military is such a good proving ground for younger people. I consider it a missed experience in my life. But when I was going through my law degree, I was friends with a woman who was a lieutenant in the Navy and the Naval Reserves. And we were talking because we were a few years older than a lot of the other law students. And she goes, you know, like really, you only grow when you've got to deal with a big problem. Right. And it's like, and she was talking about her time in Quebec. And she goes, God, I came out of that in such a huge flaming ball of shit. And you know, I'm laughing. I'm like, God, you know, I exactly know what you mean. Because when I was 23, I moved clear across the country. No family, no friends, just me in a foreign jurisdiction. Well, foreign. I'd grown up in British Columbia and I'd moved to Ohio, which is about as foreign as got for me at that time, very different place. And you know, you're all on your own and you're, you know, making your way and you're dealing with stuff and God, you make a lot of mistakes and there's no one to turn to, but not once did I sit there thinking, God, I got to turn around and go home. Right. And, you know, equipping people to take those chances and give them the tools to succeed. Right. But you're not going to putting people in situations where they're forced to grow up, right? And the military is a great example, right? It's like, there's no crying in the Navy. You're not getting off this.
We're not. You can cry while you're working, but you're doing that damn work.
So yeah. Like, I mean, it's and everybody that I've known that has done the military is so much better off for it, right? I worked with a guy in New York and he was talking about how he was in his early 20s and he was still going to high school parties and he realized what his life was shaping up to be and he went down to Times Square and signed up for the Navy and the Navy put him through school and you know he had a cush job. It was Navy HQ in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Jesus. Nice.
You know,
no. I was an engineer, man. I was disgusting all the time.
and his job was to make sure that the boats were loaded up for the Gulf War. Right. And I'm like, God, that is some real cush duty. Right. But he's so much better off for it. Right. Because he got educated. He learned a lot about logistics and, you know, having a responsible job and of course he was away from home. So, you know, I think there's always benefit in giving kids sometimes a push, right? It's like, you need to get out of your comfort zone. And we're sort of in maternal times right now where it's like, well, my baby can never be outside of his or her comfort zone. And that's, you know, long-term damaging.
And that leads into my thought. I think one of the biggest problems, it's not any one thing. It's society has become soft. We've had all these generations of all this extra wealth. What's the point of doing hard? You know, even cities, say turn of the century, for the 1900s or whatever, city or rural. Kids had to go out and freaking work just to feed themselves. You know, there was a certain level of comfortability, but you come out of that era, you know, you hit the Depression era or whatever, people were looking for work just to stay fed. And now we've worked to a point of being just, as a society, comfortable. Our poor, what we consider poor, or what and all our social services and everything off, are better off than a lot of other places, middle class or even rich people. There's people coming here to make funds or money, live off of our social programs and everything. Yeah, we look at them, you know, middle class America or higher up, all look at these guys going, well, they're just a bunch of poor dirtbags. Yeah, but they're living like freaking kings here compared to what they were doing living at home. And I think there's where you get this, oh, you can live here till you're 40. Why? Because we have the money to support you. Where our parents or our grandparents didn't have the money to support. It's like, okay, you need to start working to support the family. And I think in the rural communities, you had the farmers. Their families just continue to grow and they kind of stay closer knit, but they work to support the family. In the cities, same thing. You hit a certain age, you started working to help support the family, and then you started your own family, and then, you know, it started the process over again. But they worked. We've lost that close-knit thing, but it's because we're comfortable. There is no risk. There is no hard thing. You have more disposable income now than in I won't say any time in history. In the history of the U.S., we have more disposable income, I think, now compared to where we were previous as we're going. It's just too soft. It's too easy. I mean, you have to force yourself to go work hard. We force ourselves to go to the gym to make our physical bodies stronger. Not hard labor or work. You know, it's our choices, and that's what we've done. But it's too easy to stay in that soft, easygoing path of least resistance, because that's what humans want, the path of least resistance. So I don't think it's just a for societal thing. I think it's just a comfort level thing. We've gotten to this point.
And to that point, right? Like, I mean, a lot of things now, like people are being stampeded into stupid decisions that are sort of packaged as low risk, right? And kids, I do think, like, when I look at people in their 20s, they're being dealt a very, very bad economic hand, right? Like, college tuitions now are nuts. Like, they're absolutely nuts. And the cost of living is really high. Like, I'm of the vintage that I caught the low, or the tail end of the baby boomers low tuition party. I paid $2,500 a year tuition, and I had an apartment in downtown Vancouver with a view of the skyline for $800 a month. Right, that same apartment now is probably about $2,500 a month, and tuition is four times that. Right, the amount of money that a student can make is really not significantly much more than I was making. Right, so they don't have a lot of good economic options. But then, you know, it's compounded by the fact that a lot of you know, what's being peddled as education is actually kind of right next to garbage. Right. Like, it's just because somebody is, like, honestly, and I think it's Ed Lattimore who says it's like, if the only market for your degree is teaching other people what you learned, you just joined a pyramid scheme. And you know, we're the schools aren't equipping kids generally with the ability to go out and learn things. Right. Like, I'm just amazed sometimes at the crap my son comes home with. It's like, what'd you learn? And he's like, well, we learned about, you know, we learned about Pride Week, you know, or we learned about, you know, this obscure Indian tribe somewhere. I'm like, okay, you know, I mean, I guess there's some value in knowledge, but, you know, I've made it clear to him, I don't really care about social studies. I don't really care about the humanities because they don't pay the bills. And, you know, try and, you know, teach him about business, teach him about capitalism, teach him about entrepreneurship, and things like that. And just be really blunt and say, look, unless you're you know, going to university to either get a medical degree, an engineering degree, or a law degree, or a nursing degree, you're kind of wasting 4 years of your life, and you'd be better off going get your Red Seal, which is our system of trades. Right. So you
become. We had that exact discussion in FOE. I don't know if you were in that thread, but that is exactly how I'm raising my children.
Yeah. And it's just like, it goes to the whole zero risk thing, but I do think that that's a real factor, right? That people are getting out and they're almost crushed. Like, if you don't have an education, you're not going to make a lot of money. Right. But then the education system is actually really in a lot of ways ripping young people off. And you know, when you're, but there's
and our parents.
And our parents, right? Like, there's a certain, you know, social status to being a student. Oh, you're a student. You're doing something productive. What are you studying? Oh, I'm studying, you know, the oppressional intersection between frogs and salamanders.
How did you come up with that? Like, where did that come out of there?
That's a study.
I don't know. I used to make fun of this stuff in when I was in law school and when I was in an undergraduate. Like, the university that I went to, there was a major you know, sort of rivalry between the people that were in programs that were actually going to lead to employment and the people that were in programs just to waste time. And it was sort of a bizarre culture and a bizarre time because people weren't afraid to say that. And it just always floored me how worthless this stuff was. And then when I went through law school, right, what people had spent 4 years studying, and towards the end of my 3 years getting my JD, you know, some of these people were like, you know what, you were really right. Like, I mean, at the end of my four-year degree, I didn't actually know how to do anything. I didn't have any skills, right? And it's almost like a form of societal abuse when you're telling somebody who's 18, oh yeah, you know what, the path forward is to spend 4 years of your life getting a degree because it'll pay off in the long term, right? And it doesn't. This stuff just has literally no value. It has no intrinsic value. It has no social value. And you know, I'm in a position, and my son's mother is in a position where we can actually evaluate this and give him the unvarnished truth. But I think a lot of people, especially people that really desperately want their kids to climb the economic ladder, they're unable to see this stuff for what it is, right?
And now on this one, Alex, I want to go back to this point though. Degrees work in certain areas, and you mentioned this. If you're going to be a lawyer and you want, and you're passionate about being a lawyer, mm-hmm. okay, look at law school. Mm-hmm. If you want to be an engineer, you need to go to school. I don't know of any on the job site for an engineer. You know, that's next level stuff. You know, you work, there are certain things you do need to go to school for.
Right.
The thing of it there is though, is that's what. I'm not even up on the college. It maybe be like 10% of the degrees that schools offer, you know, 10, maybe even 20% of the degrees are actually worth going to the college university for, compared to the other 80% that are just junk and fluff. Or it's like, or why do you have to take all these crap classes when you're becoming an engineer? Humanities over in basket weaving for colored pride or something is not going to help me build a bridge unless it's, you know, in San Francisco or something. I don't know. And I think that's where it gets watered down. It's like, you could take that 4 years and jam it into two and really give them the knowledge. But where a lot of society sees it is like, well, my kid went to school. Well, they're not going to school to become a lawyer. Tell me he's going to school to become a lawyer or going to school to become an engineer, doctor, something along that lines. Then I'm like, okay, your degree means something to me. So I think there's a little bit of a split, but I'm with you on most of those degrees. The toilet paper's worth more.
I also have to, I now wonder off of what you just said, how much of this is just social status of the parent? Because you, like you just said, my kid got a degree. Well, what about those 5-year-olds? They're like, my kid's transgender and he supports equality, or my kid is all about, you know, whatever political, you know, notion they're trying to push. Look at me. I'm a good parent with this good kid. You know, it goes through life. Those same parents are the ones who are like, my kid got a degree. Your kid's $50,000 plus in debt, lost this much of their time because you were embarrassed to say your kid wants to be a plumber, or your kid wants to be like, my brother is going to school to become an electrician. I think that is awesome. But he was butting heads with my stepmom about going to college. But he's like, no, I want to get an actual degree. So he's going to become an electrician because that's his thing. He loves electronics and he wants an actual trade. And I kind of sat back because I didn't want to get involved. But I'm like, dude, that's good. You know, and I think that's great because there's nothing to brag about that guy. Like, my brother works hard. That's much better than saying my brother got a bachelor's degree, you know?
You know, my wife was telling me this thing. She heard it on the radio, and I think it's status. It's so much status. And it was one of these things where people call in about dating situations, and it was this woman who's a dental assistant, and she was dating this guy, and this guy's sister broke them up. Like, she intervened to break them up. And why? It's like, well, she doesn't have a 4-year degree. Dental assistant. Well, dental assistants actually crank out a pretty good income, right? And for the radio station calls this woman and is like, well, what do you do? And she works at a call center. And I'm not going to sit there and disparage somebody who has paying employment, but it's not like your 4-year degree actually seemed to yield much better employment prospects than you would have had with your high school diploma. And I'll never forget this quote. It's like, yeah, well, missed 4-year degrees. Like, well, I'm classy and you're trashy.
Oh my God.
Yep. And it's like,
are you actually serious? I mean, this is the evaluation heuristic I've given myself. I said, look, people will pay money to get a solution to a problem. And the more urgent or important the problem is, the more they will pay you. If you have a heart problem and it's going to kill you, how much are you going to pay the guy who can fix it? Well, just about anything I can afford. Exactly. If your toilet has exploded in the middle of the night and there is poop water everywhere, how much are you going to pay the guy to fix it? Are you and argue with him over the bread? No, come in. I'm glad to see you. And please fix my problem. Right. So giving, entering into career fields that give people like tangible solutions to tangible problems and actual value. Right. But even having these discussions, right, I don't sit down and go, okay, today we're going to talk about career planning. This is just off the cuff, random things, you know, situations present themselves. But in doing this, you're giving your kid a heuristic and analytical framework in which to see the world. And they start to make sound decisions because they see you making those types of decisions. And they see how, you know, deviations from that don't lead to very good outcomes, right? So, I mean, everything is a teaching opportunity. You know, those gold moments that come along. And this goes to your point, Hunter, like you've often said, presence is greater than presence. And I've always taken that whole, well, you know what, we're going to have this quality time in the every other weekend that I have you, or, you know, whatever I've allocated as our quality time. Quality time can't be planned. These golden moments can't be planned. They happen because you're around and the opportunity presents itself and you've got a rapport. And then you've got actually something worth saying, right? And it's only when you've got all of those things that you can actually have those quality parenting moments.
We're getting towards the end of this one, but I can't not throw this quote up there. And Alex, I'm not going to lie. I think it's safe to say you will be coming back on the show. I don't know why it took so long, but I'm going to be getting when I can. All right. So RC said, if you drop your kids off to be indoctrinated by the government when they're 5 and pick them up when they're 18, you're not going to recognize your child. It is not the government's responsibility to raise your offspring. It is not the government's responsibility to educate your offspring. It is not their, my children, I teach my children things, and the charter school they go to, which has a very high standard, it's a great school, is supplemental. They teach them a few things, but I am teaching them. And this goes beyond the multiplication table. The other day, we're getting a new couch. So we had a really big one. We took a bunch of sections off. We're keeping just a little bit until the new one comes in and we're going to swap them. And my son was like, can we sell it? I was like, sell it. He's like, yeah, I'm going to make some money. I'll sell it. He's like, he's already coming up with like, oh, we don't need this. But instead of giving it away, let's make some money off it. I was like, nah, like the dogs had bit like a little hole in it. I was like, no, nobody's going to buy this. He's like, but I want to try. I was like, all right, man, like whatever I can do. And he goes, that's how he thinks. Hey, how can I turn this for a profit? How can I have something make me some money? Because I want to buy a new baseball glove or whatever. All right, guys. I could go another hour, but I have shit
I know.
To do. Like I planned my day to start at 10 and I'm already late. So I'm just hoping the rain doesn't come because I'm going to bring the dogs hiking with the lady who's probably in the house waiting on me.
It's been pouring all morning.
It has been a huge pleasure. This is a great way to start a Friday for me. I'm a couple hours earlier than you, so thank you for delaying your day. Because I people say, well, can we meet at 8? And I'll be like, 8? We have one of those in the morning? Right? I'm not a morning person, so this has been fun. Thank you.
Awesome. Nate, for the bar soap giveaway and people who want to read your work, where can they go?
For bar soap is IG, barbaricsoap.com. Or no, that's incorrect. That's the website. You can go there too. Instagram. Yeah, Instagram, Barbaric Soap. That's where the soap giveaway is. Barbarian Rhetoric. That's the blog and information. And of course, name's been up for Twitter. And there's my daily thoughts getting thrown out and about.
All right. If you enjoyed this episode, both of these men are FOE men. So fraternityofexcellence.com, we're doing this daily. And honestly, if we recorded the content we're releasing in there, it would blow your mind. The conversations we have on the different topics weekly, it's so consistent. And this is just like the tip of the iceberg of what we're doing in there. So if that's something you want and some accountability, check us out. With all that said, gentlemen, thank you for joining me. For those who watch, thank you for supporting my work. Take care.
See y'all.